But we're going to turn now to, I think, happier news in sports, at least kind of a I don't know. It's kind of one of those things that you don't expect to see in the Winter Olympics. A lot of people will remember the Jamaican bobsled team that competed in the 1988 Winter Olympics in Calgary. Their story was so charming that it inspired the 1993 movie Cool Runnings. But they're not the last people to make an unlikely trip. Here to tell us more about this is Susan Glasser. She's the executive editor of Foreign Policy Magazine, which has a very fun feature that you can read on their website, profiling some of the Olympians that you might not have expected to see. She's here with us also. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
What gave you the idea?
Well, you know, we were talking about the outlier concept, the idea that the Olympics are not always that neatly packaged thing you see at 8 o'clock at night on NBC, where you see a few Americans competing against other people. They usually win the gold medal. Everybody goes to sleep happy. You know, that these are – that there's a whole lot more going on there, and that this is an unusual showcase for the world, right? And we went, we looked, our wonderful researchers, Kayvon and Andrew, found just extraordinary stories about the guys from Taiwan and Ghana and Brazil, and Iran has its first woman ever competing in the Olympics this year. There's a Jamaican skier this year, perhaps an homage to the bobsled team. There's a whole world of sort of interesting things that tell you actually something more about the globalization of sport, about immigration, about what it takes to compete. You know, is it only a Romania that can be good at gymnastics? Is it only Canada and the U.S. and Russia that can play hockey?
Oh, and well, speaking of what it takes to compete, I think one of the things you need to compete is a fabulous outfit. And by any standard, this is a photo essay, so I really recommend that people try to get a look at these pictures. But talk about one of my personal favorites, just based on the outfit, was the snow leopard Kwame Nkrumah Akyampong, who's Ghana's first alpine skier. And he's got this fabulous, you depict him in this fabulous kind of leopard print ensemble. But how did he do it? How did he do it? Where does he train? Certainly he can't train in Ghana.
Well, that's exactly right. And actually, if you drill into the stories of some of these folks, that's what you find in general, is that people who have a passion to compete, either it was turned on because they immigrated from Ethiopia to the United States and they happened to go skiing. In the case of the so-called snow leopard from Ghana, he was actually born in Glasgow, studied in Britain, got addicted to the sport there, and, you know, has trained ever since, of course, outside his own country where the temperature never goes below 70 degrees. So he's obviously not doing a lot of skiing in Ghana. And if you look at it, that's a lot of the story for a lot of these places. For example, there's a very heartwarming story about a Turkish figure skater who's went to the first rink that was open near her hometown. She loved it so much. Her entire family emigrated to Canada to support her dream of competing in the Olympics.
That is interesting. That's a Tuba. Let me see if I can pronounce it. Tuba Karademir, Turkey's first female figure skater. And you call her in the piece that a Turkish delight. What about the Zaretskis, the ice dancing siblings from Israel? Do you know how they got their start?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think they also have competed extensively outside the country. That's one of the mm-hmm. stories that really shows up when you look at these folks and how do they make their way to the Olympics from these unlikely places. They don't have the infrastructure, and that's why there's still only a few. That's why they're outliers as opposed to standard. There's nothing inherent, probably physically or genetically, that says that, you know, a skier can only be a great skier from a cold weather country, but there's not the infrastructure there. There's not the training facilities. There's not the qualifying rounds. For example, Latin America does not have its own qualifying round set up for the Olympics, so they have to go against these much better funded Northern American or European countries to compete for a spot in the Olympics. So there's a lot of structural reasons, too.
Dave, you're still with us. I wanted to ask about whether why is it that, and this is one of those things that people are perpetually talk about, is that why is it that we see so little of these athletes from around the world in the coverage that we typically see as Americans?
Well,
Of course, we'll see the top contenders in gymnastics or in ice skating or in ice dancing. And of course, if they're from other countries, they will be showcased. But it's typically in relation to whether or not that they'll beat an American. And I'm just wondering, why do you think we see so little of these other athletes?
Well, that has everything to do with NBC Sports and how it operates with the International Olympic Committee. This past year, the ratings on NBC are actually the biggest five-day ratings for an Olympics, a winter games that are not taking place in the United States in history. They're up 22% from the Torino games 4 years back. And how does NBC do it? They do it by feeding nationalist coverage. by showing USA athletes because they think that's going to get the highest market share. And when you're NBC and you've been swimming in a sea of Jay Leno this last fall, I mean, any ratings relief is good ratings relief.
And that's interesting. Do you think that if they were to show these others, I mean, asking you to speculate, but do you think that if they were to show some of these other stories, because I must say this is a very charming feature, and
I
think that it's just been amusing to see what and inspiring to see what people will do to pursue a passion.
Oh, let me be totally clear. I think they're underselling the audience. I mean, when you think of some of the great Olympic darlings over the generations, you think of people like Nadia Comaneci, Olga Korbut. It's not necessary that it has to be an American to capture America's heart when it comes to these athletes. And I wish they gave the audience a little bit more credit and showed some of the international diversity of competition.
Speaking of international diversity, cross-country skier Robel Teklemariam, who hails from Addis Ababa, of Ethiopia. He's Ethiopia's first Winter Olympian. He didn't do very well. Finished 93rd in his first cross-country race earlier this week, but does he get an A for effort?
Well, I think that's right. Look, that's part of the reason why you're not seeing these folks on NBC's primetime Olympic coverage is because the odds are so heavily stacked against them. Were they to be in the final heats of some of these races, they would be shown on American network TV. But there's no question that these countries are competing for pride of place. Some of their Olympic officials are very open about that. They say we want to improve our own time. We want to have a personal best. We want to show the world that we're here, that we're being recognized. For example, Taiwan has a luger. You know, that becomes a point of political pride in some places that are disputed. There's a sister and brother team from Cyprus, for example, another place that's been a hotly disputed zone for decades. And so I think there are political as well as international pride reasons. But I think of all the people that we featured in our photo essay, I wouldn't look for a single one of them to get a medal this time around.
I'm putting you on the spot, Susan. Is there anybody you're especially rooting for?
Well, I'm with you. I thought that the snow leopard outfit was just an absolutely winning thing. And I'm hoping that maybe he gets a TV contract or something out of it, if not an
Olympic
medal.
Something about the dreads coming out of the dreadlocks coming out of the ski.
Looks cool.
It is cool. It is very cool.
I don't know
cool.
if network television is allowed to say the words Kwame Nkrumah, though. So that might be a hard thing for him to break through.
I don't know. We'll have to see.
Little political joke.
Okay. Dave Zirin is a sports writer for The Nation. He's also the author of A People's History of Sports in the United States, 250 Years of Politics, Protests, People, and Play. He was here with us in our Washington, D.C. studio with Susan Glasser, the executive editor of Foreign Policy Magazine. She was kind enough to join us in our Washington, D.C. studio also. And we'll have a link to the story that her magazine produced on our website. Go to npr.org, click on Programs, then on Tell Me More. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Brecklin Booker, Monica Evstatieva, Jasmine Garst, Giselle Grayson, Lee Hill, Douglas Hopper, Arjun Hutchins, Emily Oxenschlager, Jennifer Longmire-Wright, and Enrique Rivera. Our intern this semester is Danielle Gerson. Our senior editor is Louise Clemens. Our planning editor is Lori Grant. Our senior producer is Alicia Montgomery. The program was directed by Rob Sachs and Monica Evstatieva this week. Our technical director is Kimberly Jones. She had a hand from Ivan Burkett and Neil Tevold. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more tomorrow.